This is a violent and often disturbing tale. You have been warned. Toward the front door of her home. Catherine turns away from the construction paper that she and her 5-year-old daughter had been crafting into linked chains for the Christmas tree that was only half decorated. She is surprised to see the elderly woman standing at the front door, a wide smile beaming towards the child, dashing to her with outstretched arms. Ethel was 72 years old today, and nothing would stop her from seeing her two girls, not even the agony of her illness.
"Oh, look at you,"
the aging woman proclaims. She releases a weary grip from an oxygen tank strapped firmly to two rubber wheels and receives the purest expression of her granddaughter's embrace. The two join in a prolonged hug as Catherine watches in amazement.
"Mama, you aren't supposed to be..."
She is interrupted by the sharp protest of a weary retort.
"Hush now, Kathy. There's all sorts of things I'm not supposed to be doing. Like breathing, for example. But Dr. Jacobs fixed me up good. I'm sick, but I ain't that sick, darling. Ain't no cancer gonna keep me in bed today."
Catherine admired her mother so much, and her child adored Ethel more than anything in this world. She nods at the resolve of this great hero to her family, even if she doesn't yet know how true that sentiment will become.
"We're fixing the tree, Mama. Can you help us?"
The child touches Ethel's withered hand, recalling a time not long ago when her grandmother's strength had failed her, and she watched the woman tumble down a small flight of concrete steps outside. The girl's smile faded as she let herself succumb to uncertainty, but the brilliant white smile that was returned to her dispelled all of her unspoken doubts.
"I'd love to, honey."
The elderly grandmother took the little girl into her arms again and squeezed her tightly. Catherine smiled at this for a moment, but then concern grew in her as Ethel began to cry. The embrace was sustained for several seconds, and then trembling words came again.
"I'm so glad to see you, baby."
"Me too. We really need your help."
Leaning towards her matriarch, the child whispered playfully,
"Mama is so slow."
Ethel smiled and touched the side of Vicky's pudgy cheek, then turned her eyes to Catherine.
"Don't you worry. Mama knows how to get this done. I'm still the fastest paper cutter in the West. There ain't a stitch out there that hasn't heard of me. I'll show you."
Ethel rose up and took her granddaughter's hand in hers. She pulled the air tank behind her, letting the glass door shut behind. As they neared the pile of paper and crayons, Ethel leaned back down and whispered to the girl again.
"Why don't you go get us some of those juice boxes like we had last time?"
A tremendous smile answered as a giggling girl darted away swiftly towards a nearby kitchen. As soon as Vicky was out of earshot, Catherine stepped over to her mother and took hold of the handle on the oxygen tank.
"Mama, you need to be in bed,"
Ethel replied defiantly.
"That's what everybody keeps on a-telling me. But that bed ain't made me no better. I don't have enough time left to waste it lying there feeling sorry for myself. God's gonna take me home when he's good and ready. Might as well be standing up when it happens."
Catherine smiled, but wanted to cry. Instead, she reached out and took the fragile woman in her arms. The two shared this moment, savoring what would surely be a final birthday for the woman that refused to surrender to a monster growing inside of her.
"Thank you,"
Catherine whispered, as a tear finally fell from one eye. But Ethel pulled away, wiped her daughter's face, and returned this expression of sadness with a steel resolve and an unexpected joy.
"No crying today, sweetie. Not today. It's my birthday, not yours."
Catherine could not help but laugh as more tears began to fall. The aged woman paused for a second, but then said something surprising.
"I want you to know that I will always love you. When I'm gone, well, Vicky's gonna need you to be strong. Stronger than ever before. You tell her that her mama is just fine. You tell her that God called me, and I was glad to go home."
"No, Mama, just..."
But Ethel would have none of it.
"Listen to me, Kathy. I need you to listen to me."
Younger woman calmed herself and then nodded as the moment took an unexpected turn.
"I haven't been able to walk, not for weeks, but here I am walking and talking up and about. Here on my 72nd birthday, for crying out loud. And baby, it ain't because of nothing any doctor did."
"What do you mean?"
Catherine asked with a puzzled expression. Her mother reached up and pushed a strand of hair from her daughter's face. Ethel's eyes were wide and warm as she answered.
"I had a dream last night, and this morning I just got up."
Catherine was confused.
A dream?"
Ethel nodded.
"He told me. He said I could say goodbye. He told me that I should, and he would make it so I could walk."
Catherine's brow tightened at this.
"What? Mama, what are you talking about?"
Ethel smiled and took her daughter's hand as a little girl bounded back into the room, struggling to keep a hold of 3 boxes of chilled juice.
"Everything's gonna be okay, Kathy. Everything's gonna be okay."
Ethel met Vicky's eyes, reached down and took one of the boxes in her hand. With every moment that remained, she would cherish this one.
"Oh, thank you, honey. Now let's see what we can do about this tree."
The absolute darkness of empty despair melted. Memory and clarity seemed to return, yet something had changed. The world returned. Vision was restored. But perception was somehow altered. He felt the warmth come back into his limbs, sensed the cold air of this chamber and the floor beneath him, an odd scent, like the residual odor of electricity hinted at his nose, as life returned to Perry Long. Jason rose up quickly. Perry inhaled a sudden gasp of air, choked, and began to vomit. Dr. Rodriguez moved to the ranger's side and turned him, letting the contents of the man's stomach spill out. Perry coughed and wheezed as air struggled to return to his lungs. After several seconds, the fight for respiration became less intense, until finally, the process found normality.
It's gonna take some getting used to, but you're going to be fine, Perry.
Jason exhaled a heavy sigh. He held Perry's shoulder and watched him carefully. A moment ago, all had seemed lost, but now, seeing Perry's resurrection made real, a new sense of hope was growing in him. He studied his patient, analyzed his breathing with a careful eye until, at last, the risen man spoke.
What happened to me?
Jason replied with a smile.
You're alive, Perry. You're alive.
Perry Long blinked away a haze and met the eyes looking back at him. The moments before his death began to clarify.
What did you do to me?
Dr. Rodriguez paused for a moment and thought of how best to answer this.
I saved you. You were dead. And I saved you. I'm actually a little surprised that it worked.
Perry lifted an eyebrow. Jason continued,
I'm sorry, it's just, well, I haven't ever tried to bring someone back from the dead. Everything I ever tried to do is based on stopping death from ever happening, not well.
The ranger turned his body, lifted up an arm and made a fist, stretching his muscles, popping his fingers as he did so. Something seemed different in his bones, almost as though they had become more solid than before, strangely rejuvenated, younger.
What the hell did you do to me?
Perry asked again with a low rasp. As he waited for the scientist to respond, he put his weight down onto his legs and was shocked to discover no pain in doing so.
My leg,
Perry whispered.
Yeah,
Jason finally replied.
It was broken, wasn't it?
Perry Long turned his focus to the man staring back and waited for him to continue. After what seemed like an eternity, Dr. Rodriguez finally obliged.
It's gonna take some time, but you'll start to see a lot of things change. Your body is healing right now, so I don't know exactly how long the process will take, but once you're back to normal, well, that's really just the beginning. The beginning,
Perry muttered inquisitively. Jason nodded.
Yeah.
Cindy stepped cautiously towards the woman, amazed that this could even be real. In her dreams, she had seen Deborah's face glowing and white. The girl had been comforted by her presence, even though she had never known the woman's name. Today was a day of miracles, but this was indeed the greatest of them all. Colt licked the woman's face again as Deborah reached out towards the nearing child.
Hi there,
she whispered lowly. Cindy was still too stunned to answer. She smiled shyly and lowered her head, stopping a few feet away. Deborah turned and glanced at the wall behind her, stared for a long moment into the dark tube,
that she had only recently emerged from. Her hesitation lingered. David would not follow. She shut her eyes and said a silent prayer for the man that had given up his life for hers, and then turned back to the friends that he had delivered her to.
"My name is Deborah."
The girl smiled and tried to repeat this back.
"Deborah?"
She spoke with obvious pain. Deborah nodded. She looked to the young woman while continuing to rub Colt behind his ears. He was silent and grateful for this.
"I see you know him. His name is Colt. He's a police dog,"
she offered and was glad to see recognition in the girl's eyes.
"Oh, good. So you know each other pretty well. Do you know where his master is?"
The girl smiled once more and nodded, though as she did, the smile faded. Deborah sensed something was wrong from this change of demeanor and began to rise to her feet.
"Where is he? Can you take me to him?"
she demanded. The girl was shy and recoiled as Deborah's movements hastened. Noting this, she took in a deep breath and tried to calm down.
I'm sorry," Deborah said with a clearer voice. "I've just been through a lot."
She felt a little silly stating this to a girl that had obviously endured a trauma that Deborah could not imagine. But Cindy did not seem offended or bothered by this. She only stared back with eager attention. Deborah continued,
"Can you show me where he is?"
Cindy motioned towards the woman, signaling for her to follow, and began to step out into the chamber. Deborah looked to Colt for a second. He met her eyes. Something was indeed wrong. He whimpered and whined for a moment, but seemed ready to accompany her. She rubbed the dog's ears once more, and then started towards the tunnel ahead. But Deborah turned and looked back just as she was leaving, giving a final glance to the silent pipe, hoping against hope one final time for the man that gave his life for hers. She did not notice, but Colt looked back as well. He too felt like he was leaving something behind, even if he could not understand why or what had led him to this room. The chamber soon fell silent as Cindy led the dog and Angel back down the musty maze. Ethan slammed his hand against the controls to his elevator, but nothing happened. There was no power left in the house. Behind him, a roaring blaze of fire sent bright yellow embers up from the floor below and scattered them into the wind like a swarm of hellish fireflies. Dark black smoke poured over him like a blanket, consuming all sight and most of his air. Time was running out. He had never expected the structure to be enveloped in fire this way. State-of-the-art suppression systems had been installed during the initial construction of his home, but they had not been designed to cope with the collision of a fully armed attack helicopter, nor was the backup power for each capable of withstanding the shockwave that had disrupted their connections. This home had been built to stand for decades. All signs seemed to indicate, though, that it would not survive the day. Ethan was not about to go down with it. Because the upper level of his mansion had been kept secret and access to it had been restricted, Dorian's architect had insisted that there be an alternate means of escape in case of emergencies. Ethan had protested this. After all, how could the room remain secure if there were multiple ways to gain entry to it? His protest
lessened, though, as time went on, and eventually he agreed to allow a trap door to be installed at the opposite end of the room from the elevator. At the time, Dorian considered killing this man for his arrogance. Today, he was glad that he had hired such a stubborn contractor. The boy found the latch on the floor in the far corner of the room. The heat from the fire was less intense here, but he opened the hatch carefully anyway. The way down was dark and cool. No smoke came up from the chute. Ethan peered down into the darkness for a long moment and then dropped down into it, rushing forward towards the floor below. Kevin Hill's vision was starting to blur. His shoulder throbbed in agony, but he forced himself to ignore it. He pressed his back against the cold wall at his back and raised the pistol in his other hand. Jim stood at Kevin's right side and leaned out just enough to look into the room ahead. He held two guns, one in each hand, and looked ready to make use of them both at a moment's notice. To Kevin's left, Derek Hamilton watched the courtyard. Suddenly, a soldier appeared from behind a cloud of black smoke. Hamilton aimed and fired one shot from his pistol, dropping the man before he ever saw them. Kevin saw this and nodded, sweat dripping from his forehead, as the three prepared to breach the Dorian compound. Jim turned to the wounded man, glanced to the blood dripping down Kevin's arm, and then asked coldly,
"You say this Dorian guy is tall, maybe 6 feet, gray and black hair, blue eyes, right?"
Derek answered, instead of Kevin,
"Yeah, it's him. You see the fucker?"
"No,"
Peabody responded lowly.
"I just want to make sure I recognize him before I blow his head off."
Kevin nodded.
"You see him. You shoot first. Ask questions later."
His words were slow and forced. It was clear that breathing was becoming difficult, but Jim acted like he didn't notice. The man deserved at least that dignity. Jim looked again into the doorway. The room ahead was bright, filled with vivid orange flames that were spreading rapidly upward. Dark smoke emptied out into the air sporadically, giving enough sight of the way ahead to ensure that they would not be walking into an ambush. Gunfire could be heard somewhere inside the inferno. Though he could not see the battle, it was enough to set Jim's heart racing. Jim had little doubt that they would not survive this. This consideration might have been disturbing had it not been shared equally by them all. Jim took in a deep breath and prepared for what was about to come. Derek turned his eyes to the younger officer and felt the need to offer one last sentiment.
"Stay close to the ground in there. Shut your eyes if the smoke gets too thick, but keep your ears open. Understood?"
Jim and Kevin each looked to Hamilton. Each man looked to the other without motion for a prolonged moment. And then Kevin broke the silence, offering a sincere statement.
"I can't thank either of you enough for this, for believing in me and being here."
Derek nodded.
"Mr. Hill, you can thank me when this is over with. Right now, there's some work to do."
Hamilton chambered a new round in his pistol and grinned. Kevin would have smiled if the pain were not so severe. Instead, he blinked, turned his face towards Jim, and winced from the wound's sustained agony, forcing a final word to his comrades.
Let's finish this.
And with that, these three hardened soldiers left the wall behind and entered the heart of Dorian's lair. A radar screen blinked as a green line swept across a circular display. Ian kept a careful eye on the readouts from the protection of his secluded vehicle. Radios screamed and echoed the sounds of a battle unfolding nearby. He waited another moment and then began typing feverishly into a small keyboard, sending instructions to a pair of circling drones. He felt prepared for anything that Dorian had left for Alpha Team, even if he had not expected the Hind. To his surprise, though, a separate monitor began to flash. He turned his eyes away from the details of warfare and watched a strange orange light displayed across a panel nearby. His eyes tightened. His pulse began to race, and after a moment he realized the extent of this unwelcome development. John flipped the toggle on his rifle, shifting the weapon into fully automatic. He flipped and rolled from the cover of a destroyed car, trading it for the resistance of the eastern wall to the massive building. He waited a heartbeat and then spun forward, firing towards the enemies ahead. A bullet screamed past his head, but that was the closest any of them would come to hitting him. When the smoke cleared, five men lay at John's feet. "Not bad," James quipped from the remains of the broken car. The soldier glanced back and rolled his eyes.
"Alpha leader, come in!"
John's radio buzzed. He sighed and ignored it, trying to gain a clearer sight of another gathering of distant fighters.
"Come in! Alpha leader, come in!"
Annoyed, John leaned back against the wall and retrieved his radio.
"What the fuck do you need, Ian? Daddy's working right now."
Ian did not hesitate.
"I'm tracking a pulse signature. Looks like a Meritus-type event nearby."
James and John each reacted to this in a similar way. John lifted the transmitter and spoke into it carefully.
"What the fuck are you talking about?"
Ian's voice, almost always subdued and monotone, was shaken by whatever he had just seen. With newly discovered emotion, he answered,
"The signature! The one we were told to look for! I just recorded one less than a mile away."
John and James locked eyes.
"It has to be Rodriguez,"
James offered. John nodded.
"Wily fuck, that Mexican."
Welch pondered this for a moment and then retrieved his radio. Switching the device on, he spoke to John one last time.
"You handle the extermination. I'll see about this pulse."
John nodded as his compatriot retreated from the battle, issuing orders to unseen men. John smiled to himself. He was glad to have some privacy. He always worked better that way. One of Dorian's mercenaries lifted his head above a bush just enough to be noticed.
"Well, hello there,"
John muttered, and readied himself for a new round of war. Through the catacombs of sewer pipes and tunnels, Colt heard the familiar whistle of a friend. He froze and his ears lifted firmly upward. The whistle came again and sent the dog darting forward as quickly as his legs would carry him. His heart began to race, beating furiously within his chest. Joy and terror took hold of him at once. His mother's call had seemed so real, and yet, was it? Perhaps this, too, was some phantom of memory or imagination. That would be more than he could endure. Colt rushed forward and heard the shrill squeal again as he turned the corner around a tunnel and saw his friend standing, waiting, healthy and strong. The dog barked loudly and then uttered some garbled exclamation of emotion. He stopped a few yards away and jumped into the air, seemed to chase his tail in a circle, and then barked again. Jason could not stop himself from laughing. Perry smiled widely and knelt down as his loyal partner ran forward and dove into his arms. Dr. Rodriguez had seen many amazing sights, but this unrestrained display of love and devotion was beyond anything life had ever shown him. Perry Long grinned widely and rubbed the ears of his dog with grateful vigor as Colt returned the affection with every display of elation that an animal can. Cindy and Deborah walked, hand in hand, sharing the same smile, watching the dog and master reunited. The girl was glad to see that the ranger had not died. Something inside of her knew that he would be okay. Bob took credit for that. He always did. She was pretty sure that it wasn't his idea, but sometimes friendship is more important than being right. Perry saw them as they neared. He recalled the girl's face, remembered enough of her to place the role she had played in his resurrection. But Deborah? Jason seemed stunned at the sight of her as well. They froze in disbelief for a long moment, until their smiles came again. Today, the impossible became reality, and reason seemed a hazy memory. At the brink of every horrible probability, some way, somehow, they had been delivered. But how much longer could this magic last? This has been Ethan Eternal, Chapter 32, The Reunion. For more information, please visit onemanasylum.com.